Commodore Hour is on the air. Over the next hour, we'll discuss the latest around Vanderbilt athletics and hear from players, coaches, and administrators. Commodore Hour is brought to you by Gupton Chrysler Dodge Jeep Ram in Springfield. By Regions. Get the Vanderbilt University Visa check card from Regions. Visit Regions.com/anchor down to order yours today. And by the Middle Tennessee Ford dealers. Built Ford tough. Commodore Hour starts now.
Welcome to this edition of the Commodore Hour. Andrew Allegretti here with Kevin Ingram. Coming up on tonight's show, a couple of conversations about Vanderbilt basketball with head coach Jerry Stackhouse, as well as women's basketball coach Shea Ralph, coming your way here shortly on the final episode of the Commodore Hour before we flip the calendar over to 2022. So we'll take a little bit of a break here for the holidays and return after the new year in 2022. Kevin, first off, we're doing this one. I think this is the first time that we're fully doing this remotely. You and I typically have been in the same room, whether it's live, whether it's been pre-recorded or whatever it happens to be, not to divulge too many secrets. But today, feel free to tell the listeners exactly where you're bringing them tonight's edition of the Commodore Hour.
Andrew, I am actually in Honolulu. I'm right outside the arena here on the University of Hawaii campus. In fact, I'm right in the middle of all the sports facilities. I was thinking as I drove in here, Vanderbilt is going to be seeing a lot of all of these places in the coming months because the football stadium is right here next door. The baseball park is just on the other side of that. So the team's getting in some practice work as we speak, and then the games will start on Wednesday here in the Diamond Head Classic. But yeah, we made the long journey out here yesterday. It was quite a trip just to get here, but man, this is one beautiful place. First time I've been to Hawaii, so been really looking forward to coming out here, and hopefully some good hoops as well to go with it while we're on the island.
Yeah, there you go. Our home away from home. I'm at the office, so
okay. Yeah, it looks like it's a good spot.
Before we get to hoops, I think you and I have talked about this. I went to Hawaii to play Hawaii in football years ago, and the team I was with stacked some activities along with the trip. So, Well, yes, this is desired to be a business trip. I think most universities understand the fact that their guys may or may not ever get back out to Hawaii. So they try to do at least one or two things that allow them to experience the trip. What is on the slate for Vanderbilt men's basketball over the next couple of days?
Well, you're right, Andrew. And kind of to the bigger point of that, I think these trips are important. You want to play the games and get, obviously coming out here and trying to win some basketball games is big. And that's the case with any kind of trip like this. But it is also about providing these student athletes some experiences that they might not be able to get or might not have had before or ever again. And so I know going to Pearl Harbor this afternoon is on the agenda. The team, when it's done practicing, is going to head out there. There's some nice meals scheduled at a couple of different restaurants that are close by. We're staying right on Waikiki Beach, which is really cool at the Outrigger. So, I'm going to have some fun activities. But once the games start, the focus is really on that for Wednesday, Thursday, and Saturday when the games are taking place. Christmas Eve, there won't be any games, and we'll have a little bit of downtime. But, yeah, there's some neat things going on, and they've done a great job of organizing it all. The folks that you're used to, Shasha and Nikki and Andy Fox, they're always great at putting everything together.
All right, so what I'm hearing is that there is no luau scheduled.
Not as far as I know. That's something I would kind of like to do while we're here. I looked into it, and we may end up doing something like that, but I really like to take my family out and drive around the island and just go to the north side of it and just see some different places. Even just driving over to your campus, it's amazingly beautiful to just see all the things you can see. I get I'm an easily distracted driver to begin with, and today wasn't exactly my finest performance driving, but there's a lot to look at,
Note to self. Never give the keys to Kevin. Like if we've got a road trip in the future, I'm going to handle the driving.
I can get us there quickly. I think that's
Yeah. Okay. Speed versus safety. Let's talk.
It's a trade off you have to make sometimes.
That's right. For sure. It's always a needle threading. Let's talk some hoops. Where's the mental state of this Vanderbilt men's basketball team heading into this slate of games out in Hawaii? The things that they're excited about, the things that they're still working on. Obviously, coming off a nice victory against Austin Peay just a couple of days ago.
Yeah, Andrew, I think there was a lot of things really feel good about in that Austin Peay game on Saturday, and it felt like the shooting got well. It's kind of 16 from three in the second 20 minutes of the game, and really that was what opened up the game. But it was almost like it was two different games on Saturday. The first half was all about offensive rebounding and second chance points. Vanderbilt dominated in those areas and really did for the day, 26-9 overall in second chance points. The performance of Quentin Miller Brown, first of all, was really impressive. 13 points, 14 rebounds, had a double-double. His first as a Commodore. And then in the second half, to go back quickly, Scottie Pippen Jr. went over 1,000 points early in the game. Congrats to Scottie. Hit a three and took care of that right away. So much of this team's success is based on how the shooting goes from behind the arc. Those assist numbers and point total, all those things look a whole lot better when those shots go in. So I think this team comes out here with some confidence. You also got a first look at Chapman, who had been injured through the first 9 games. And we saw him out there for 15 minutes. I got a feeling he probably wanted to play more than 15 minutes, but they're taking a knee with him coming back from the injury. And they shook up the starting lineup a little bit, too.
All right. So the first game coming up for Vandy is on the 22nd. So that is Wednesday. It's a late tip off locally, 11 p.m., which I guess for you guys makes it a 7 p.m. tip off out in Honolulu. So you've got Hawaii lined up. You've got BYU and South Florida out there as well. Just size up the competition for Vandy here at the Diamondhead Classic. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, it starts, Andrew, with Hawaii on Wednesday night. They really haven't played very many games. They're only 4-3. But what stands out about the Rainbow Warriors, their three-point shooting. We talked about that for Vanderbilt. They shoot 37% from three. They make 9 per game. So trying to defend that is going to be a key for the Commodores. Led in scoring by Bernardo da Silva. He's only played 3 games, but has averaged 15-8. And a couple guys in double figures for this team. But a pretty good group. You know, like everybody in college basketball, they have some transfers. So, they don't play very many players. It looks like a pretty short rotation. Really only about 10 or 11 that you notice as far as showing up really in the season totals. But I think it'll be a nice challenge for Vanderbilt starting on Wednesday night. And then, as you mentioned, BYU or South Florida after that, and 4 more good teams on the other side of the bracket that we'll see one of those in the third game on Christmas.
All right, so we'll step aside, come back in a couple of seconds, continue our conversation. It's the final 2021 Commodore Hour. We'll turn the page to 2022 when we return on this show for the next episode, but we'll come back in just a couple of seconds. We'll talk a little bit about Vanderbilt women's basketball. Coach Stackhouse, Coach Ralph, all coming up. We'll step aside, come back in just a couple of seconds after this on the Vanderbilt Sports Network from Learfield. Welcome back to the Commodore Hour. Andrew Allegretta here with Kevin Ingram. Coming up just in a couple of seconds, we'll talk with head coach Jerry Stackhouse of Vandy men's basketball. Plus, not too long after that, we'll talk with head coach Shea Ralph of Vanderbilt women's basketball. 7-5. They've got a trip up to Philadelphia. They take on St. Joseph's tomorrow. That's an 11 a.m. tip-off. And then on Wednesday, 11 p.m. tip-off for Vanderbilt versus Hawaii. So, final games here for everybody before the holiday break, although you guys are kind of just charging right on through that. So let's do our wish list here. If you're talking about whether it's gifts, whether it's New Year's resolutions or whatever it happens to be, let's do our Vanderbilt Athletics wish list, specifically with some of these programs. I'm going to let you lead things off. I've got in the back of my brain what I'm really looking forward to it and crossing my fingers for in 2022. But why don't you lead us off, Kev?
Well, I think, first of all, for Vandy United, the wish list includes $300 million. Maybe that's a good place to start.
you beat me to the joke. Like, I was sitting on that. I shouldn't let you go first.
Yeah, I know. You shouldn't go first. I wish for good health for our basketball team, especially Liam Robbins. Love to see the 7-footer have a chance to get back and be on the court and be a factor for this Vanderbilt team as we get into SEC. Different things you can choose from various programs, but certainly to see good help for this basketball team, for me, would be one of them that I would go with.
All right. So I think my next one up would be for Vanderbilt baseball. And no one team, as I'm sure Coach Corbin would identify, is weighted on a singular person. But my wish is for Patrick Riley to be comfortable in his position in 2022. I think we all understand that replacing quote unquote rocker and replacing quote unquote lighter is a heavy task, and Patrick just needs to be himself. But there's a lot of pressure that comes with that. And and for someone that's in their early 20s to understand that they just have to be themselves is difficult. He's got all of the talent in the world. I think everybody understands that. I think he has got the skill set to be that sort of primary guy for Vandy baseball going into 2022. You know, my wish is everybody else around him helps him out, right? So Christian Little develops, and you can put together a rotation with someone like Carter Holton, a freshman that is really strong too. It's not dependent on Patrick Riley, but you really do need to feel extremely comfortable handing a baseball to somebody on a Friday or a Saturday and saying, okay, we're going to get one win in this weekend, for sure. And then we can figure out the whatever, right? Like you figure out your pathways to getting two out of three or all three in weekend series. So my wish is that Patrick is comfortable within himself, doesn't put too much pressure on himself, and kind of becomes the player that we all certainly think that he can be.
I think that's a great wish for Vanderbilt and for this baseball program. And I'm wishing for the season to hurry up and get here, because I want to see what some of these young guys are going to do. We got a little glimpse of that in that black and gold series. You talk about Carter Holton.
If I've got one more wish, I think I would somewhere along the line of like this recruiting class for Vanderbilt football to truly prove itself as one of the more impactful recruiting classes that we've seen for Vandy football in quite some time. I think historically it ranks as the second or third highest rated class in program history, for what that's worth when it comes to rankings. It's got tremendous depth. The depth is fantastic. And I think the depth is sort of what makes it really good. It's 23, 24, maybe 25 kids strong when you get to the finish line after February. But there's a lot of value in this class. And my wish is they sort of become the incoming freshman group that you can point to that says, oh, you know, this was Clark's first class. And 4 or 5 years down the road, you go, holy smokes, we didn't even talk about X player, and he's made this impact on the team. So between Patrick Riley kind of settling in as that guy and this incoming crop of freshmen, 23, 24, 25 guys, really establishing the work ethic, the skill, the talent, the depth that they're going to bring to this Vandy team. Those are my two primary ones. I don't know if you've got anything else, Kev.
Those sound great. I'm with you on football. Yeah, you wish for this recruiting class to live up to its billing. And you're right. There are always guys that maybe weren't talking about on the front end. Yeah, I'm really looking forward to seeing what this fall class is going to be like, not only in the spring, but on down when they actually get here. So,
all right. So that'll do it. We'll step aside. We'll come back in a couple of seconds. We'll talk with head coach Jerry Stackhouse in a minute, as well as a conversation with Shay Ralph shortly here on our final 2021 edition of the Commodore Hour. We'll not be with you next week. We'll take a little bit of a pause from our podcast, The Anchor, as well. Let everybody soak in the next 7 to 10 days, whatever it happens to be, as we get our way toward the new year. We hope everybody enjoys all of the games out there. Of course, men's basketball starting on the 22nd with their trip in Hawaii, which is where Kevin is now. Women's basketball has two more games before they hit.
Did I mention I'm in Hawaii?
Yeah, that's right. Yeah, no, not we're well aware that you're in Hawaii. Your internet connection is also well aware that you're in Hawaii too. We've heard everything crystal clear, but it's stuttered just enough to remind us that you're on a beach and we're not.
Well, I'm a few steps from a beach. I'm not actually on a beach. I'm working here. It's a work trip.
Yeah, business. Yeah, business a trip with business attire that is no doubt sandals and a Hawaiian t-shirt.
Can you is it okay to wear flip-flops to do a game?
I think it's not only that, I think it's mildly mandatory in Hawaii. That and like, I think they probably, you know, when you go to the NCAA tournament, they don't let you walk onto the court. I know you know this, right? With anything other than like a sanctioned cup. And it's probably the same thing in Hawaii. Like,
yes, I'm not worried about you.
Yeah. Yes, you are. it's the same thing in Hawaii. Like, you may not step foot onto a court without your school sanctioned pair of sunglasses.
I'll keep that in mind. So yeah, that should be good. I'm going to kind of survey the situation on Wednesday night, and then I may adjust my attire as we go through the week here.
Happy holidays to everyone. We'll step aside here on the Commodore Hour. Come back with Jerry Stackhouse in just a second. For Kevin, I'm Andrew. We're back in just a couple of seconds. Continue our conversation, Vandy Men's Basketball, after this.
Gus Wettekamp inside the U.S. Bank Studios as we continue this edition of the Commodore Hour. We've got for you Coach Jerry Stackhouse's post-game conversation from that win over Austin Peay, 77-51. A victory for the Commodores, and Coach Stackhouse sat down with Kevin Ingram and Tim Thompson after the game.
We're back in Nashville. Vanderbilt defeats Austin Peay 77-51. The Commodores go to 6-4 with the win. And Coach Jerry Stackhouse joins us courtside as we continue with our Mountain Dew postgame show. His postgame comments are brought to you by Ascend Federal Credit Union. Congratulations on the win, first of all. And it kind of felt like two different halves. The first half was about offensive rebounding and putbacks and working the paint. The second half, the three-pointers really started going in for this group.
Yeah, man, we did a good job. Again, they played man, you know, for the most part, and we were able to get loose, get on the boards, and then in the second half, they went to their zone a little bit more. They had a little success with that at the end of the half. We expected it, and then our guys moved it pretty good. A little stagnant there at first, but then we started finding some holes in the zone, and guys got loose, and we made some shots. So that magic number of 11 threes.
It's amazing how your offense is easier to run when you're knocking down open shots, isn't it?
No doubt. Our guys, and we had, you know, we left a few on the table. That was great shots for us, but it was good for, you know, certain guys to see him go in. I thought it was great for Trey to get going a little bit again, and Tyron was able to knock one down. You know, Gabe got it started early. Again, I think he's a great piece, you know, to mix in with us because he's solid defensively, but, you know. It wasn't great to have Rodney Chapman back out there.
A little bit about the new starting lineup that you started tonight. A little bit different faces.
Yeah, I think it was. I think for Miles, you know, we replaced Jermaine, you know, with him. I think it gives us another, you know, guy that we can post, you know, in that lineup. Obviously, we can, you know, throw it into to Q, and he's a great passer, and he's finishing better. But I think Jermaine is a guy, as you see, he was really patient there on the post, and then he can go to work, and, you know, really an advantage for us there. And Miles, I think with Scotty and Jordan, I really want him to come off and kind of be aggressive, you know, really be aggressive in the second unit. Come out there, we try to run some things. As soon as he got in the game, try to run some things for him to see if he's going. Brings us a dynamic as far as a stretch four that can shoot the basketball, but, you know, those other guys give us another level. Jermaine, you know, a little more quickness, as a defender that can switch out and do some things to help our defense there. Obviously, Rodney's going to be back in the lineup. So I think I was just trying to get Tyron more comfortable in that second unit a little bit, trying to find a rhythm and a chemistry with those guys. And I really think we got a group, man, that, you know, could do something special. I think we got a team that we're on any given night, we got six guys that could get 8 points.
Yeah.
You know, and that's unheard of. I mean, like, really, I think if we really share the ball and do the things, over time, we could have six guys that's averaging eight, maybe even 10 points a game.
Was Rodney Chapman trying to talk you into, you know, playing 30 minutes today or something like that? Probably had to rein him in a little bit.
Yeah, he was it was right where he wanted to be. I mean, I think I was listening to Brandon. He said he felt comfortable with him having 15 minutes, and he was right at 15:55. So I went over by 55 seconds, so that wasn't too bad.
You can tell, though, that when he's on the court, he gives you a different dynamic defensively, and then also he takes a little pressure off Scotty when he can run the point.
Yeah, you're not going to be able to play soft on him. I mean, he has ability, has a quick first step, has ability. I thought that last one that he got in there, I thought that was a gold 10.
Yeah.
Then he got in there and got him an easy, you know, quick layup. So, I mean, I just think he just knows how to play. He's a good passer. He can pass it with both hands. I love to, I always tell our guys, try to make passes with two hands, but there's always exceptions. You know what I'm saying? You know, you can pass it with one hand if you can get it there.
Yeah.
If you can't get it there, use two. But no, he's really adept at you know, moving the ball and making sprays. And I think that's going to be really good for our shooters, having the vision. I mean, watch. Our bigs are going to get some easier opportunities, too, just because his ability to pass the ball. And it's going to take a ton of pressure off of, Scotty and Jordan. Yeah.
Quentin Millora-Brown scored a whole bunch of points today, but not a lot of them were easy. He really worked hard to get on the offensive glass, get stick backs, and had a nice game with 13 points and 14 rebounds.
Yeah, he was huge for us, man. I thought he did a great job of containing their big, too. I mean, that guy's a load down there, and he battled with him all night, and he was a big presence for us on the offensive boards, cleaning up defensive rebounds, you know, a couple block shots. I mean, Q was huge tonight. Hopefully he continues to play and trend the way that he's trending, but now, you know, Jermaine, you know, can slide over. T. Frank did some good things for us today, too. I mean, he came in, and his ability to guard, again, allows us to do a little bit more switching, especially with fives that we don't mind rolling, that we don't feel that could hurt us there. We did a much better job of playing with the two in the pick and rolls. We worked on that a lot this week, and I think that limited their three-point attempts. I think this team easily probably would have got up 40 threes if, you know, we didn't adjust our defense a little bit. We're still going to have teams that we play that we can be aggressive and really, attack the ball like we've been doing in our past, because we've been successful with that. But at the same time, I just felt the volume of threes, we wanted to get that number down a little bit, and we were successful with that tonight.
Scotty came in needing only a couple points to go over 1,000. He took care of that right away. What about reaching that milestone for him?
Yeah, I mean, it's great. I mean, it just, you know, speaks to his talent and a little bit of longevity. You know, guys hang around, and it was great for us that we were able to get him back. But I just think it's about to open up for him even more. You know, man, we just can, you know, get Rodney back in the mix, keep him healthy and whatnot. Still trying to be smart with his minutes early on, but it's great that we got a little bit of a break right now just to try to let him recover from the night and then continue to build and strengthen our group. But I'm really pleased tonight, man, after a couple disappointing games for us to come out and have a performance against, because this team has been playing well. They're very capable of getting hot from three, and I thought we defended them well.
Head out to Hawaii now. That's going to be some tough competition out there on this trip.
Yeah. I mean, some good teams, good games. Just prayerfully, everybody can stay healthy, man. Yeah. I think that's the key. I mean, you saw the game, the cancellation maybe helped us a little bit today. A few of the fans, they got turned around. It was a nice group in here. Nice noise in here today. But I think it's a great test for us, great experience for our guys. We're looking at it as a business trip. Obviously, we're going to have some fun and enjoy Hawaii. A lot of our guys hadn't been there before. A lot of their families are going. But try to tell them to try to let Sha and Adele and Andy and all those guys take care of everything that they can for them, so we can just still focus on our business. And I think our mind frame is right, and we're ready to go and take care of ourselves.
Congratulations on the win today. Appreciate the time.
Appreciate you guys.
Thanks,
sir.
All right.
That's Coach Jerry Stackhouse with Kev and Tim after that win against Austin Peay. We'll come back with more of the Commodore Hour right here on the Vanderbilt Sports Network from Learfield.
Welcome back to tonight's episode of the Commodore Hour, our final show until we turn the calendar over to 2022 here with the head coach, Shea Ralph. Let's go two parts here. First off, at 7-5, two more games to go before you hit SEC play. Give me the favorite thing about what your team has been able to do on the court so far.
I think I'm most impressed with our defense and the way that is progressing. I think it'll serve us well the rest of the season. I love our confidence in it. I love how competitive and aggressive we're being in it. And I think that it always starts us off on the right foot. So no matter what happens, and I've said this before, but we should always be really good on the defensive end. I think our team is starting to take it personally, and that lets me know that their belief in themselves is growing, right? They think they can compete with anyone. They're having pride in what they're doing on the floor, and they understand that every single possession really matters during the course of a game, no matter who we're playing. So to see that kind of take place and take hold on our team is very, very inspiring and exciting.
Why do you think you've been able to be efficient within that? Because, you know, I think in 2021, sometimes getting a group to buy into defense is not always the easiest thing to do, especially when maybe it wasn't the calling card at the start of the season. It's evolved into that. So how did you get this group to buy into something that other coaches can't necessarily get a team to buy into?
Yeah, I think it's probably like a layered onion. When you look at, you know, why they bought in the way they have, I think every day they see something about it that they like. It's, first of all, it's really, really fun. And what makes it fun? It's fun to play against another team and how do I say this nicely? Like, as a competitor.
Agitate them.
Yeah. As a competitor, when I was playing, we used to have a competition within the team that I was on that whoever's man asked for a sub first, you know, would buy the rest of the team dinner. You know, like, it was this thing where you just want to deflate the other team. You want to embarrass them. You want them to not want to play. And I know that's like, those are harsh words. But when you play defense the way that we play defense, and you see that look on their face, you see there start to be some contentious interactions within the team, you see the team start to break down in front of your eyes, you know now you have them. And I think that part of our defense and being able to do that to teams early on has really shown our team that, okay, it can be, when we started off in the beginning of the season, it was very difficult for us to score in the half court. And now that we have put so much emphasis and emphatic, like, this is who we're going to be on our defense. Now all of a sudden the ball starts going in the basket. We get easier shots. The game is a faster pace, which is much more fun to play. Sorry, it's the first day with my new mouth apparently. but
welcome to my world.
Yeah.
All of the time.
Yeah, it's just, I think that every time we get out on the floor and we tweak our defense and we show them a different way to play it, and we scout a team and we're going to take this away, they start to see, okay, we can do this to other teams, and also we don't want them to be able to do it to us. So we're continuously finding ways where we can capitalize on our strengths while getting better with our weaknesses. And I think the team has seen already how much better we've gotten over the last 2 months, and it makes them want to work every day to get even that much better.
Talking with head coach Shea Ralph, a great example of that, by the way, was Jordan Cambridge having 10 steals against Albany about a week and a half ago. Fantastic stat. Let's lean into the other side of being a coach. What's the part of your team that you're most zoned in on? The thing that at the moment, at 7-5 going into SEC play, we better take this up another level to make sure that we can continue to compete as the elevation of talent comes on our schedule.
Yeah, there are a few things. I think it depends on the day that you ask me. I think maybe the overarching thing that I would say worries me the most is our lack of consistency. We will have a great quarter and then it will look like we're down by 30, you know, or the next quarter we just come out flat, or we come out flat after halftime. I don't understand why we do that. We are continuing to work on the being consistent for four quarters, which isn't easy to do, but why would you do it any other way? So that lack of consistency bothers me, because you can't have a bad quarter. I mean, right. You're talking about a whole quarter? You can't have that in the SEC play. We've got to play tough four straight quarters. Now, we're going to have possessions here and there that are going to be disappointing. That's part of basketball. But it can't be 10 whole minutes. And we've put too many of those. I mean, I don't know that we've had one full game, maybe Arizona, that we played pretty consistently throughout each quarter. So that definitely going into SEC is a concern, but it's something that we address every day. It's something that we're working on. We talk about, we're you know, using different strategies. I think that's up to our players. They just have to come out and play. You know, that's not a strategy thing. That's an energy and effort thing. So that's my biggest concern.
The most recent game for you guys against Presbyterian, there was that stretch. It was the second quarter where Presbyterian got back into the ball game, and then you sort of enforced your will in the second half of that ball game. It was interesting going through the stats, because I kind of hunched that you know, maybe the defense dipped a little bit, but the steals were actually higher in the second quarter than they were in the third or the fourth quarter. Yeah. So to an extent, maybe it's just the lack of the ball going in the hoop that particular quarter. I don't mean to simplify basketball down to just that, but I guess what I'm getting at is, you know, at least statistically, the one thing that jumps out is elevating the offense
right.
and getting more points up on the board for you guys. How do you think about where your offense is at the moment? Is it just going to be a byproduct of making sure the defense is good, or are there things within the half court where you think your group collectively needs to take a few strides?
Yeah, I think I'm okay in general with our offensive execution in terms of, can we get shots in the half court? Yes, we can get them. Are we going to make them? I don't know. We you know, that's concerning, obviously, but I think we're doing a much better job of getting high percentage shots. And like, we made 10 threes last game. That's big for us. We've spent a lot of time shooting the ball so that when we get these open shots that we orchestrate to get, the people that are open to make them need to make them.
Yep.
And that's important. So going down the stretch, we'll get open shots, whether we make them or not. you know, that's you'll that that result to see on the stat sheet will probably end up, did we win or lose? Well, how many shots did we make? The other part I think that we can control more is our turnovers. So that has obviously plagued us. I mean, I think we force like 20.8 and we turn the ball over 19.8 times. So we get, you know, we get the ball and then we give it right back to them. That can't happen. So when we, the goal of our offense is to get an open shot, a high percentage open shot, then our players have to make it. If we turn the ball over, that's unacceptable that many times. So going into SEC play, I am, you know, we're tweaking with our offense. We're playing with it. You know, we're getting better at it every day. I think we're getting the shots that we want to get. We just have to make them. The bigger concern is, are we going to turn the ball over? And we're going to keep working to make sure that we keep those really low so that we can get more shots, because the more shots we take, the more points we'll put on the board.
We'll step aside, continue our conversation in just a second after this. Welcome back. Final episode of the Commodore Hour before we turn the calendar over to the 2022 slate as the SEC plays rolls around for women's basketball here with head coach Shea Ralph. Let's get you out of here on a grab bag of questions, or perhaps at this point stocking stuffer of questions would be a good term. First off,
I know, baby. I'm almost ready.
You've got high priorities because you've got a trip coming up.
We do.
And I want to know, what has been your daughter's favorite Christmas present to date? Not coming up, but to date so far.
That's a good question. What's been your favorite Christmas present, Mason? A teddy bear.
Great.
We have about 452 teddy bears at our house, so I couldn't tell you which one that is, but a teddy bear.
Give me your favorite Christmas present that you've ever gotten. That can be adult life, that can be kid life, that can be, I don't know, whenever. Give me a Christmas present that stands out in your brain from once upon a time for head coach Shea Ralph.
Well, I'm going to tell you this. We obviously, Christmas is a really important holiday for us. We're faithful. But my presents are every day that I have my husband and my daughter. They are the best gifts I could have ever received in my life. They didn't have to happen on Christmas Day, but I get to experience them every day, and nothing makes me happier than that.
That is too sweet. Give me a sense of the house at the holidays, because you and I were just talking about this. It's got some people in it, huh?
We do. We have a very big family, which is awesome. You know, Mason is our only daughter together, so she's usually spending most of her day with just Tommy and I. Now that we have about 10 to 15 people in the house over the holidays, that has been
No, I'm only chuckling because I was literally doing that exact same thing yesterday.
Yeah, Mason really wanted to do this podcast, everyone. I'm sorry. She was climbing up to talk into the microphone. But we are really excited. I think, and I talked to our team about this too, though. We still have, you know, we're going on this road trip. We're bringing my niece who's with us and our daughter. And I know our players are excited to go spend time with their family, but we still have a couple of days of work left to do. And so right now we're just trying to stay focused on that while also thinking about all the great things that we're about to experience with our families after COVID, and it's still going on. So we have talked about safety as well. I know everybody knows that. We've seen games already being canceled. But the fact that our players can go home, that we can go home and be with our families, is very, very exciting. I'm looking forward to it.
All right. Two last quick questions. First off, who are some of your closest friends within this industry, and how did you get to know them?
Most of the people that I am close with are people that I have played basketball with, worked with at UConn, or know through Tommy. And, you know, I'm a little bit different. I don't have a lot of close friends. I keep my circle very tight. I'm very nice and kind and all the things. But
it seems to be true to me.
Yeah. I learned a long time ago to keep your circle tight. And so I have my staff probably here are the people that I've been closest to. I tried to hire people that were very loyal and that I trusted, and I thought for a very long time about who that would be when I got the opportunity that I did here at Vanderbilt. So that's kind of how I operate in life, not just in my job, and it served me really well. The closest people to me are the ones you're going to see around me.
Last question for you. Give me one thing about Geno that runs counter to the narrative publicly of Geno, of the, you know, tough, strong, all that sort of stuff. Give me something about him that runs counter to the public narrative.
I think when people watch him coach, you see this, you know, fiery Italian.
That's right.
Red-faced, spitting, yelling at the refs, technical fouls, all of those things. And he is. He has that side to him, very passionate and outwardly aggressive almost. But I don't think people understand behind closed doors how much he puts on his own shoulders, how much care he has about our players, his relationships with them and the staff. And, you know, usually when he's angry, it's usually at himself, and that he feels like he hasn't prepared the players enough, or their failures he takes on his own shoulders. So you don't see that when you look at him and you see the way that he coaches sometimes, especially in the games recently. But no one cares more about their players, and no one puts more onus on their success than him. He is constantly blaming himself for their failures, and putting pressure on himself to make sure that he gets everything he can out of the players to their full potential, because that's why they came to UConn. So it's something that most of the world doesn't see, but it's what makes them so good.
Fascinating answer. Coach Jay Ralph, thank you so much for your time.
Thank you.
Back in a moment after this.
Guess what, camp back inside our U.S. Bank studios as we draw to a close this week's edition of the Commodore Hour, the final edition of the Commodore Hour for the 2021 calendar year. Just a couple of notes from around Vanderbilt athletics. The Collegiate Baseball Magazine ranking the Vandy boys at number 2 in the nation in their latest rankings. A good sign for Tim Corbin's crew. And the early signing period for Vanderbilt football coming to a close recently and ranked in the top 30 on a couple of different composite rankings. The only other Vandy signing class to get into that top 30 was back in 2013. Of course, you talk to Barton Simmons, you talk to Clark Lee, they'll tell you numbers and stars don't mean much. It's about the players and how they fit into the team. And to talk a little bit about that, Coach Lee did talk about that just a few days ago at this conference, talking about his class.
In terms of speed and length and the things that you guys really needed?
You know, it's like upgrade, I think it's more just about the measurable traits, right? Like we wanted to go after measurable traits. And to be a developmental program and to project, guys that will have positive contributions to the program, the more that you can look at and say, here are the speed numbers, here's the length, you know, this is why we think the growth is coming. And I think we feel really good about this class from that perspective. You know, we think we have measurable speed in the class. Obviously we've gotten longer, and I think that's a great start as a foundational class for the program.
In early November, you know, you guys backed off their commitments, and yet you guys rallied to have done well for yourselves. How were you guys able to build that
moment? Well, we have the makings of something special here, and it's just not going to be for everybody, and that's okay. I mean, you have to be a visionary. You have to be a builder. We want competitive people to understand that the work ahead is critical, and we got a lot of ground to cover yet. And today's certainly a day of celebration, and it's a great day for our future as a program, and yet, it's about our effort in getting the guys in this class ready to play next fall and then growing them through the course of their career here. But, we knew all along that, it wasn't necessarily going to be for everyone. And I think ultimately what was important to us was that we had the measurable physical traits and then the mindset of a builder. And we had guys that were going to come in here and lock arms and believe in their hearts that they were going to be responsible for being the difference. You know, we wanted that level of competitive mindset, that level of confidence, and I think that, you know, obviously we found that in this group. And the more people spend time around our program, the more people spend time around our team, they recognize the energy and the growth that's happening, that's kind of bubbling from within. And so through the close of this early signing period, we were able to get guys in house, get them around our staff, get them around our players. And ultimately, you know, the players become the most important parts in recruiting forward. And so was pleased with how we rallied and was pleased with how we finished. And I think that's something that we now build into the 23 class, right? It's just, it's the never-ending machine here, but we're definitely excited.
Get to your close, past classes here that you've lost players, you scrambled the last week to find kids who are projects, guys that we don't know who they are. This class, you lose some kids and you go pick off some guys that were committed to schools that have had more recent success. Not something that staffs have done here. How are you guys able to do that?
We've said from the beginning that if, especially early on, I think, you know, to recognize that we're still in the infancy here, we're still in the early part of this build, we understand that our ability to go out and identify players that can have impact in the SEC, play at a high level in this conference, that we're doing our job best when in the end of the cycle we're having to fight for the players that we've recruited. And to me, that it becomes inherent or important that we lead with relationships, that ultimately we lead with connection to vision, that those things are things that, that keep, again, the foundation of a class solid. And I was really pleased with our ability to weather, you know, the outside interest in our class, right? Like that was a real, threat that we faced. And we had a group of guys that had bought in and believed in what we're building, and they want to be a part of it. And so to keep this class intact through the end to the signing day today was a fight, and it was a fun fight, and it gets all of us excited about what's possible. And then to build upon the class late in the finish, again, I think speaks to what's possible here. You know, we're not going to sit back in the corner and apologize for being Vanderbilt. This is about us going and rolling our sleeves up and fighting for this program every single day. But in the end, there's only one in the country that's a top 15 school that's stitched in the middle of Nashville and that's playing in the football, in our opinion, in the only conference that matters, the SEC. And that's here in Nashville. It's at Vanderbilt. And so we're not going to apologize for that. We're going to go out there and recruit to it and find the guys that can help us build this into what we know it can be.
Along those lines, could you talk us through the process of keeping Darren Abu committed and having him sign today, and then how significant it is to win a head-to-head battle against Tennessee?
Well, again, Darren's a guy that, you know, saw early the possibilities here at Vanderbilt. You know, we were able to pry him away from a competitor early in the process. And again, I think, Javon Hay did a great job building a relationship there and getting him connected to vision. And we knew that he was a player that was going to draw a lot of interest, right? He's just he's a guy with a tremendous upside that already has measurable skill. In the end, we knew that we were going to be one of many suitors. And I think that ultimately for Darren, it was about connection to vision. It was about belief in what's possible here. It was about getting back on this campus and recognizing all the good that exists here at Vanderbilt. And, it was, for us, we think that's one that we're going to be really excited about, you know, a win late that is going to have a ripple effect for us over time. We're excited to watch him develop, as we are the rest of the class too.
How much did Barton Simmons mean to your recruiting effort? Can you give me some specific stories or instances where he really adds value to what you do?
He's Barton's smart, and I think above anything else, he has an incredible ability to sift through and find the most important problems, the most important things, and have impact that way. He's an outside-the-box thinker. I wish that he were more fun here. Like, I feel like he's just so serious all the time now. And, I miss that on-camera persona that he used to. I'm just kidding. He's an incredible addition. I think what he does is he runs and orchestrates both the scouting element and the recruiting element. And so there's kind of two parts to that, right? There's talent evaluation, talent acquisition, and that becomes the lifeblood of a successful program. I think what our responsibility here as coaches and as support staff is to deliver an experience that retains the team, right? And so there's recruiting inherent in that too. But, you know, Barton's lead in that general manager role has taken some time to get some footing. I think he would admit that he's learning and growing. This is his first time through this. You know, there is a lot. And I think particularly when you start talking about not just his role, but also has his role, how it interconnects with, you know, admissions, how it interconnects with our campus, you know, all those things combine to make it a pretty dynamic experience. And what's exciting to me is continued growth, continued comfortability in the role, I think will even enhance and push results further. But Barton is a very valued member of the operation. I think he is, you know, obviously he's a dear friend, but more than that, he's an expert, and he brings that expertise every day. He has a willingness to see things differently. And here at Vanderbilt, I think taking a different approach is part of the foundational principles that's going to drive us to our potential. And so I think Barton's done a great job, as well as the staff, as well as our coaching staff, combining in a team effort to build a first class here that we're really, really excited about.
That's head coach Clark Lee talking about some of the players and support staff and coaches involved in signing the class of 2022, including, of course, the general manager of Vanderbilt football, Barton Simmons. That'll just about do it for the final edition of the Commodore Hour for 2021. Again, thanks to Coach Ralph for sitting down with Andrew earlier, and of course our man Kevin Ingram on site in Hawaii. We'll hear from him in just a few days' time as we'll get set to bring you the Diamond Head Classic. Vanderbilt's involved, of course, bring you all three games coming up later this week. That'll do it for us for now. Thank you for listening.
Thanks for listening to Commodore Hour. Tonight's episode was brought to you by the Middle Tennessee Ford Dealers. Built Ford tough. By Regions. Get the Vanderbilt University Visa check card from Regions. Visit regions.com/anchordown to order yours today. And by Gupton Chrysler Dodge Jeep Ram in Springfield. The preceding has been a Learfield presentation of the Vanderbilt Sports Network.